Hi, welcome to the One-to-One Thing podcast. My name is Steve Wright, a seasoned IT manager and personal development coach, unpacking what it takes to have a meaningful one-to-one conversation at work, home, and in our head. We all live lives full of conversations that range from awkward to impossible. Join me as we learn to navigate the one-to-one thing.
Hi, Sue Davis. Great to have you on the Managers Who Lead, but we finally made it. Nice to have someone in the UK, so we both can lament over the weather. And apart from that, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. The weather where I am is starting to perk up a bit, so that's something positive for the day,
because
it was an hour ago.
Well, you're a bit further south than I am, but hopefully it will work its way northward. So you're a conflict coach.
Resolute. Yeah, I'm a workplace mediator and conflict coach.
Conflict coach. Yeah, you don't coach for conflict, you coach to avoid conflict.
Conflict resolution. No, I don't assist people with their fights. I assist them with finding a resolution to a conflict in the workplace.
Perfect. So tell us a little bit about that journey, where that started for you, and some of the backstory that really makes this your passion today. What was your journey to where you are now in terms of the work that you do?
Okay, so my background is in HR, generalist HR, and I sort of describe myself as a gamekeeper turned conservationist. I have seen workplace conflict from all angles, including my own. I've been miserable at work too. And my mission when I became self-employed 5 years ago was to reduce misery in the workplace. So I help people to find creative solutions so that they love their jobs again, whether it's the same job they're currently in or sometimes another job.
Mm-hmm. I love the phrase reducing misery, because I think there's so many of us that can resonate with that statement. How do you define misery?
I was miserable at work for a long time before I realized I was miserable at work. Yeah. I would be on my journey to work and really not looking forward to being there. And actually how it showed up for me, and I think this is quite common, is I was spending so much money on things I didn't need. Expensive handbags, going on holiday. And since in the last 5 years, I have spent hardly any money at all because I don't need to self-soothe anymore. But it took me a long time to realize that that's what I was doing. I was going on amazing holidays and fabulous holidays because I needed to escape from where I was. And I see that quite a lot in people who are desperate to go away on holiday. Actually, what they need to do is improve where they are now and perhaps not escape from it quite so much. I'm not anti-holidays, but going on holiday is amazing. But working in HR, I have seen so many people who were just so unhappy and miserable. Lots and lots of the people I work with will have had extended periods of sickness absence, sort of stress-related, often stress-related, not all always, but, they'll have had long periods away from work because they just actually can't face being there. And for me, that's just such an awful place to be. To feel in that situation and to be really trapped. And when you are in that feeling of deep unhappiness, it's very difficult to get another job. Because, I've interviewed people who've said, was working in HR, who've told me things in an interview and I've just immediately thought, well, I'm not offering them a job. Because, never tell a prospective employer that you took your last employer to an employment tribunal, because they're just not going to offer you a job, are they? It's a really tough place for people to feel that trapped.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting because asking the definition of misery just came out of your tagline, which is awesome. And your explanation of how misery shows up is really profound, because often people don't equate their spending habits or what they do outside of work as a compensation for poor work or a poor work environment. And, you know, for those listening, if there are behaviors that are showing up, and like you said, a holiday is a holiday and a holiday is lovely. But if it is nothing more than a band-aid or a camouflage for something that's an underlying issue, then like you said, saving the money for a nice holiday on your terms when you want to go and be happy to come back is very different than trying to, you know, counting down the days until you've got 2 weeks off from a horrible or a boring job.
If you're using it to escape, and also, I mean, going on holiday is lovely. I love going on holiday, but you don't need to do it four times a year. You know, when you're spending a lot of money on expensive handbags, expensive shoes, and all of those things are great. But if I think what happens to people is they feel trapped. They're in quite a high paid job, which is a very high powered job, which makes them very unhappy. And so they think, I can't leave this job because it costs me so many thousands of pounds a year to fund my holiday and handbag habits. But actually, if you didn't have the holiday and handbag habit, you wouldn't need so much money. So it's a bit of a vicious cycle, if you like, and it is possible to break it. But it's not easy. I'm not trivializing this. When you're unhappy at work, it's a really tough place to be.
Yeah, yeah. For the guys out there, it could be a man bag or a briefcase.
Oh,
or
absolutely. A motorbike.
It could be clothing. I mean, keeping up a habit.
Yeah, and men buy expensive shoes too.
Very much so. So then, in the sense of, you know, those are the signs that if you're compensating outside of work for something in your work, then it might be worth looking at what it is in your workplace. What are the sort of the first steps once you get to that realization that, you know, you could use to address it?
Okay, well, and another, just, I mean, that's one of the ways it shows up. Another way that it did show up for me, but I know it's much more for some other people, is interrupted sleep. And sleep is so important. So if you're waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, constructing an email to your boss to explain to them how awful they've been, then you need to do something about that. Now, it's very easy to say, I mean, I'd love to say, contact me, pay me loads of money, I'll come and do a mediation for you. There are, and that is one of the solutions. Often your own internal sort of HR department might be able to help you. You can try and have a conversation with the person who's causing the difficulty for you. I'm very happy to help people, obviously, to have a brief conversation with somebody to set them in the right direction without charging them anything. But, you know, I have bills to pay as well, so I can't do mediations for free. But something that is very accessible to people is to understand what a mediation, for example, process contains, and then perhaps to put somebody like me in touch with their employer, and their employer would fund that. So if that's, there's lots of different ways of accessing ways to overcome. What I would say is the worst possible thing you can ever do, and if I ruled the world, it would not have a grievance process in it. Never raise a grievance, because it just doesn't help. And sometimes what happens is people will approach their HR department and explain how, you know, what's happening for them, and they'll be handed the complaint or grievance procedure. And that's, and you know, when somebody comes to you and they're unhappy, they don't want to raise a grievance. Well, you know, they might do. They don't want to have their boss's head chopped off and put on a spike on London Bridge. They just want the pain to stop.
Yep.
And giving them something that will, an adversarial dispute resolution tool doesn't make the pain stop. So I'm all about non-adversarial. So conflict coaching, mediation, yeah. So never raise a grievance would be my advice. I have raised a grievance once myself many, many years ago, and it was a catastrophe. I felt much worse afterwards than I did before. So, and as a very seasoned HR professional, I can let you into a little secret. If it was serious enough that something needed, some action needed to be taken against another person, it wouldn't be a grievance. It would be a disciplinary matter. Their manager would be dealing with it. So that's my sort of take on, you know, the grievance process. It just upsets people more. That's just my own. Other views are available. Lots of people, you know, may find that works for them, but I haven't, in many, many years, I haven't seen it have a great outcome. And a great outcome to a problem at work, I would see, is people who've had a conflict, they overcome the conflict, they find a way to talk to each other and express what they need to be different and move on, and they carry on working in the same job together, professionally, cordially. You know, they return their relationship to what it was, you know, at an earlier time before the conflict started. So that's what I would see as a resolution. When you start going down the adversarial route, you start getting things like compromise agreements or settlement agreements, as we call them now. And often one party will be exiting the organisation. But if you want to retain the services of both people, the organisation values both of the people.
Yeah.
There are other ways to overcome challenges, even long-term ones. I've had very, very successful mediations with people that have not been able to be in the same room for 12 months, literally haven't been able to talk to each other. And when they get together, and there's a process that you go through to bring them together, it's very quick, only takes a couple of days. And often you will hear one say, I never thought of it from that point of view. And then back in the room, they're talking to each other. It's not magic, but it often feels like it.
Yeah. It's interesting because you start from a place of looking for the solution rather than aggravating the problem. And even the term grievance, when you're talking about the grievance procedure, I almost perceive it as it's in the interest of the organization, let's say, you know, you're an employee bringing a grievance against another employee to the employer, and the employer says, well, we've got this thing because it's part of the HR package, or this is what we just do. And like you said, it's not that all people want when they're in misery is for the misery to stop. So the last thing you want is to introduce another layer of misery and angst while you go through a grievance procedure. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I did a mediation a couple of weeks ago where somebody had taken their challenge to the HR department, and they'd ended up, and it moved into a whistleblowing situation. And the person who had the problem hadn't ever said, I want to blow the whistle on someone. And then it sort of got bigger and bigger, and then it gets bigger than Ben Hur. And really, they're just saying, this bad thing's happening, I need it to stop.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, because in an interpersonal conflict, even outside of the workplace, you can see how when people argue staunchly from their position without acknowledgement or validation of the other party's position, then they entrench themselves in that role. And they, in order to keep the entrenchment valid, they escalate they escalate the importance or the degree that they've been aggravated, and you end up with this argument kind of thing going on. Yes, what started off pretty small ends up just growing because of the nature of things and then people's egos.
One of the things that I'd say to, you know, when I'm mediating, and I start off with individual meetings with each person, so I don't sort of bring them together and bang their heads together. In the individual meetings, there's two really important ideas. First of all, they have to really want to resolve the conflict. They need to want to be on the other side of it. And the other one is they have to be able to acknowledge that the other side is always at least 10% right. Mm. And if you can't, it's worrying to me if I can't get people to agree to both of those things, because that's more indicative of what you were just describing, those very entrenched positions. I'm right, you're wrong, because that's not helpful. So
absolutely. Without spilling the beans on confidentiality, what are some of your toughest scenarios to mediate through?
One of the mediations many, many years ago that was really astonishingly successful was between two people in a workplace. They'd worked together for a long time and they'd had a disagreement, and one of them became very stressed and went off sick. I was actually off sick for a year. This was an organisation that paid 6 months full pay and 6 months half pay. So this person exhausted their entitlement to company sick pay, and then they had to come back to work. They had bills to pay. They didn't have a choice. So they came back to work after. So they had not spoken to each other for a year. They came back to work and the dispute between them continued and escalated to such a point where one of them was accused, and I have no evidence that this actually happened, but this was talked about. One of them had spat in the breakfast of another. This was a truly nasty, horrible situation. They literally could not look at each other. Yeah. So as almost a last-ditch attempt, we thought, let's try mediating. So I mediated between these two people, and within one day we reached an agreement where, and one of them actually apologised to the other and said, I'm really sorry, you're right, I did do the thing that you accused me of, which I've been denying for the last 12 months. And then they carried on working together for years afterwards. They never were friends and they never became friends, but they worked together cordially and positively after a year of one of them being off sick. It was very outstanding. But yeah, and that's why I say it isn't magic, but sometimes it feels like it.
Mm. Yeah, I love what you do. I mean, we connected on one of my audio drop-ins on LinkedIn, and you know, you shared ending misery in the workplace and everyone's ears popped up. And it's such a positive attribute, focus to take, you know, and like you say, mediation as opposed to grievance. You know, the part that language plays in how we approach a conflict is important, and only the outcome.
Yeah, it is. It's really important. And, you know, it's not the most fun that the parties to the mediation have ever had. It's a difficult process. But if the situation they're in is really difficult and they want to continue working for the same employer, so I describe it to them as, you're here now and you want to get here. We've got a little hill to get over and it's not going to be easy, but it will be worth it. So it's a gradual process of bringing people towards the understanding that they can actually address this other person. Yeah. And having the mediator, so having somebody else to facilitate the conversation really helps. One of the things that is really helpful too is when I go into an organisation and I, as the mediator, I don't have any of the history. I have no skin in the game. There's no baggage. I am completely neutral and objective. And it's much easier for the parties to establish trust with me than with an internal somebody trying internally. So often the disputes that I help people with are often between a manager and a subordinate. And then what sometimes happens is the manager's manager will try and intervene and resolve the conflict. But of course, the subordinate doesn't feel that they're getting an equal bite at this cherry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of history and baggage, and it's difficult for them to trust the mediator. So, of course, that sounds like a giant advert for Bring Me In. And obviously, I would love that. But what some organisations and particularly charities can do, if you have trained mediators in your midst, you could just swap. So I could come and mediate in your organisation and you could come and mediate in mine. So no money changes hands. So it's a value exchange. So, I mean, obviously I think it's better if you get somebody like me and you pay for it, but there are ways around it if money really is the challenge that's getting in the way.
That's interesting in terms of having skin in the game is important. I've asked coaches on various interviews, you know, what are often the barriers, the resistance that organizations have to coaching, whether it's internal if they have that resource or external if they want to go out for that resource. And like you said, in a mediation setting where you want the parties that may not be sort of equal, one, there's a hierarchy between the parties that are having the mediation requirement, having another party within the organization step in and try and see them as equal is going to be somewhat difficult. And no history, no baggage, no skin in the game is definitely, I think, a very refreshing place to start. It's coaching and not mentoring. I see as maybe there's an opportunity for you to show what you know in the context of a business. But when you're coaching, you're really there to look after the best interest of the individual that wants to get from A to B. Do you see that play out in sort of the wider scope of interpersonal relationships?
Oh, absolutely. So I did my mediation training, I think in 2012, something like that. And I've been mediating since then. And lots of the people that I've mediated with have taken the structure, because it's a very structured, simple process to follow, into other areas of their life. You know, when two of my neighbours had a dispute over, one of them was having a garage built, and then when they had the garage, it was a metre closer to the boundary than they'd originally intended. And of course, the temptation is to get into a massive row about this, but that doesn't help anyone, does it? So, you know, I spoke to them. I didn't mediate for them. I had a conversation with them and explained to them, this is a better way of dealing with this. Listen to what the other person's saying and respond to what they're saying and discover what they need and help them find what they need. Yeah, so workplace mediation spills out all over the place.
Yeah, that's powerful. Is there a mindset the person or persons involved in mediation ought to have? I'm just thinking of, are there people that cannot be mediated, unmediatable or whatever?
It does happen, and it has happened. I've been doing this for many years, and there have been. I mean, there was one particular occasion where I had to stop a mediation and say, there is no reasonable prospect of success. Mediation is not the right tool for what's happening here. You need to do something else. And that the particular instance I'm thinking of, I can't give you the details because it's really personal, but one of the parties had suffered the most tragic loss that anyone could suffer. It was a really catastrophic, tragic loss in their family. And they hadn't been able to deal with the loss and it was spilling over in their job. And they had a colleague who was really concerned about them. And we tried a mediation. But after I spoke to the party who'd suffered this tragic loss, and this happens in coaching as well, to me it was very clear that there was a boundary issue. What this person needed was counselling and psychiatric help. This was not a workplace dispute. This person actually should not have been in work. They weren't in an emotional state to be in work. So, you know, that was a very extreme example. Occasionally, if you get someone who is going through the motions, if you like, of mediation in order to access something else on the other side, and in the workplace environment, for example, that might be they want to go to take their employer to an employment tribunal, something along those lines, then that can be less indicative of success. So I always say that to the parties up front, if and this goes to my earlier point, unless you genuinely want to resolve the dispute, mediation probably isn't the right tool, because in fact, all you're doing is, you know, exposing yourself, because, you know, it's not the most fun you can have with your clothes on. You're setting out your stall, you're taking somebody else through a process, and actually that's not really what you're seeking. So yes, the mindset needs to be open. And one of the most important things in mediation is the ability to listen with the intent of understanding what the other person is saying, and not simply remaining silent until they shut up and you can jump in and say what you want to say. So that's the mindset, open mind, intent, you know, listening with intent. And those are skills that once you've practiced them, they're the skills that you can take to an argument with your partner or with your neighbour, because you've learnt it, you've done it, you know, in action. And having had that experience is something that, you know, you've learned it, so no one can take it away from you.
Yeah, that's great. And it's very much the Stephen Covey's seven habits. Habit number five, I think that is, seek first to understand, then to be understood.
Yeah.
We often don't exercise that muscle enough in our interactions. But one of the questions I was going to ask was, if I was having or seeing an issue at work that is making me miserable, what are the things that I could exercise before going to someone like yourself?
I think thinking deeply, but objectively as possible. Obviously, when you're in the situation, you think it's entirely somebody else's fault, and that's when you want their head on a spike. But actually, if you try and consider the situation and the impact the situation is having on you, so you think, in this meeting, I felt insulted or whatever. So the impact on me is blah, 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 sleepless nights, whatever the impact is. And then the important thing is, what do I need to be different? Because that's what the other person needs to hear. I need to be able to find a way to say to you, this happens and it has a really negative impact on me, and I need this to happen instead. I need you to take into consideration the fact that I'm neurodiverse, or I need you to take into consideration the fact that I'm a wheelchair user and it takes me longer to get into the room than it, or whatever it is. Yeah. But to be able to, as you know, in and reduce it to, what do you need to be different, and how are you going to share that with the person who needs to understand it? Because that's often when you get the light bulb moment, when somebody will think, and actually I've heard this so many times, gosh, I'd never thought of it from that point of view. I did not realize that that was the impact this was having on you. And often it's followed by, I'm really sorry. I wish I'd known. I wouldn't have done it. And then, you know, you're cooking the gas. We're going to get to an agreement. And that's great.
That is awesome. What do I need to be different? Is a great question to answer for yourself, so that you can articulate it to the other party. I had a spin on this as well, in terms of, how do I need to be different in looking at this issue, because sometimes it may be me.
Exactly. You know,
and maybe I can do the work without ever bringing up the issue with somebody else, because I could be activated by some other behavior. They remind me of somebody, you know, and it's nothing to do with them.
Exactly. It might be. And it might be that if, you know, what I need, so I need you to understand what I need to be different. And then I might think, well, how will you know that if I haven't told you? And yes. And then the whole conflict can, you know, you might not need anyone else to help you. But when things have got really, really difficult, when people have stopped speaking to each other for a long time, when somebody's been off sick, you know, it's much more difficult. But a lot of the stuff that I'm working with people, I hope, and I, you know, I do say this to them, you'll never want to meet me again, but you will want to reuse the tools that we're using, because you'll be able to do this on your own.
What a gift. I think that's that ought to be the mantra of most people in sort of the caring coaching professions. It's not about wanting to meet me again and again and again, but actually learning the tools that you can use for yourself to be better. You know, whether you're a fitness coach, a health coach, you know, there's so many places where you don't want to enable your clients to depend on you as much as give them the agency so they can do what they need to do for themselves. That's such a great mindset and a gift. Sue, thank you so much. This has been an awesome time. The internet's been a little bit patchy, but it didn't take away one iota from the content and the quality that you brought today. So I really appreciate you taking the time for us to connect this in this way. Just quickly, what's the best single way to reach you? How do people...
find me on LinkedIn, curse of a common name. I am Sue Davies, mediator. If you took Sue Davies mediator, you'll find me.
Right, fantastic.
On LinkedIn. Yeah. I have a website, but I think my website's actually under construction at the moment. I'm sure everyone always says that, but yeah.
Me too. That's fine. We'll have a link to you in the comments. If you're watching this live or you catch this on the replay, do reach out to Sue. I would love to find out if people have got stories of how they've dealt with a difficult situation in their workplace. It may not have to go to mediation, and hopefully didn't go to grievance or any of those serious processes. But sometimes we have tools and techniques and things that we can do way ahead of getting to the point where we need a third party to step in and try and sort of separate the boxes and give them neutral corners and all those dramatic scenarios. But thanks again. And
it's been fun.
All right. That's great. Okay. Thanks
for joining me today. Please subscribe and leave a review. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. My details and links are in the show notes.